Mr. Holquist.
May it please the Court, Mr. Layton, Mr. Hatfield. My name is Alan Holquist, and I represent the appellants, who were the plaintiffs below, who are asking this Court to hold that to the extent 160.415 of the Missouri Revised Statutes requires the state of Missouri to withhold local tax revenue or state funding from the Kansas City, Missouri School District to fund charter schools, it violates Article 10, Sections 11G, Section 16, and Section 21 of the Missouri Constitution. And I'm going to deal with those three constitutional provisions in order. I'll deal with 11G first. That's unique to the Kansas City School District. It pertains only to the Kansas City School District. It was adopted in 1998. It generally provides that the school board of the Kansas City School District may enact a levy of less than $4.96. The key words of 11G are as follows. The school board of any school district may establish the operating levy for school purposes for the district. And it's appellant's position that 11G provides that the Kansas City School District may adopt a levy to raise tax revenues for the schools of the Kansas City School District, of which the charter schools are not part.
But it doesn't say for the schools of the district. It says for school purposes for the district. And why wouldn't another publicly funded school, such as a charter school, fall into that definition?
Okay. If you look at the rules of construction for constitutional provisions, it says, one, look at the historical context, look at the intent of the voters at the time, look at the plain way the words are used at the time. And I'll deal with it that way. The historical context was in 1998, we had a federal court-imposed levy of $4.96. The sole purpose of 11G was to replace the court-ordered levy of $4.96 with a $4.95, and charter schools didn't exist at all. And then if you look at the language that was used in education statutes and school statutes up to 1998 and continuing today, there's a dozen different places where for school purposes and for the district are used in the statutes and in other constitutional provisions. And if you give them their plain meaning and the meaning that was used at the time, it means only schools of the Kansas City School District. It's never been construed for the district. It's never been construed in the other statutes.
But the money that's raised through that property tax levy goes to the Kansas City, Missouri School District, but that the charter schools draw down state aid that would be the same as the combination of local sources and state sources. So there's no direct payment from the school district to the charter school.
No, but it's taking an equivalent. Originally, as enacted, the Charter Schools Act 16415 did require the school district to determine a per pupil amount of local money and write a check to pay it over to the charter schools. And then it was changed after the school district filed a separate lawsuit in 2005 to provide that an equivalent amount is withheld from the school district's funding and transferred to the charter schools. The effect is the same. In the Rolla case, you had the state legislature imposing a requirement to provide special education services to 3- and 4-year-old students with disabilities, and no specific mandated funds. And the state argued that what they were providing was unrestricted state funds to cover that mandate. And this court said in the Rolla case that the effect of telling the school district that you may use other unrestricted state funds would be to require the school district to take its local tax money and to raise it, to raise additional local tax revenues to replace the revenues that the state is now mandating go to this new service.
When the legislature proposed this language for this constitutional amendment, wasn't that the same year they also proposed the charter school legislation?
It was the same year.
So why
And that's what the only thing that the state defendants and the interveners rely on is that they were adopted at the same time.
So then why wouldn't for school purposes have then taken into account that there were going to be charter schools since it was passed contemporaneously?
Because, well, one, it refers to operating levy. It specifically says the school board may establish the operating levy. In any definition of operating levy, it means a levy of tax revenues to fund the operations of the taxing authority. In this particular case, Kansas City, Missouri School District is the taxing authority. It's authorized under 11G to issue a levy to fund its operations.
But it doesn't say that. It says for school purposes for the district. It doesn't say its operation. There's a lot of other words that could be used to be clearer if the amendment wanted to be clear that it was only for the district's operation.
Right? No, it does. It says may establish the operating levy for school purposes for the district. And when you put that into the context that the Kansas City, Missouri School District has no role whatsoever in the operations of the charter schools. It doesn't set the schedule. It doesn't determine admissions. It doesn't hire the teachers. It doesn't conduct the schools. It doesn't buy the buildings. It doesn't provide governance. If the legislature and if the voters intended that 11G would include charter schools who didn't exist at that time, the more clear thing to express the intent of the voters would to add the word charter schools. If the interpretation is that 11G would allow funding of any schools within the boundaries, that would not only include charter schools, that would include schools like Barstow or remedial private schools. That would allow the legislature to require vouchers by taking money away from the Kansas City School District. If you apply the rules of statutory construction, as this court has set out in Neske and Boone County and Rolla, you look only at the language of the statute itself.
But likewise, under constitutional construction, don't we try to give the constitutional provisions their broadest intent?
You do try to give it. That's the mandate, to give it its broadest possible construction. And if you were to hold that for school purposes for the district includes charter schools, that would ignore, it would be, and in my position, an overly broad construction. It would ignore the historical context and the purpose for the 495 levy. But it would ignore the prior use of the words operating levy for school purposes and school district, and it would give a meaning of those words that's never been provided previously.
Well, that provision was voted by the voters of the state as a whole.
That's correct.
To authorize the school board, because in every other school district, the school board puts it to the local voters to pass whatever they're going to pass, but apparently that was not the case in Kansas City. But here's my question. If the state pays different aid to the Kansas City School District than to the Independent School District or to other school districts or to the Ladue or Clayton School District, how does that fit into your theory? Because obviously, all of these districts have different levels of aid, depending on how they come out. And so, if the legislature wants to factor in per pupil aid to other schools other than the schools of the district, is there something?
It is I think the legislature may set a foundation formula that considers the local levy. It does that. What this does, if what the legislature did in 164.15 is that it established a new activity, new programs, charter schools with new buildings, new fixed costs, new administrators, new teachers, and said, we're taking part of your money. Not reducing it to balance them, but taking it to fund an activity for which there's no appropriation.
Excuse me, is it your money? You see, the assumption of your question is that the money that comes in the form of state aid belongs to the school district.
The local revenue is the revenue of the Kansas City School mm-hmm. District. And requiring the Kansas City School District to write a check paying local revenue violates 11G. The other side doesn't even argue that.
Statute?
I'm sorry?
Is that what happens under the current statute? I thought they no longer wrote checks.
They changed it in 2006. In my point, it's form over substance. They said you no longer have to write the check, but we're going to withhold that from your state fund.
And then that goes back to Judge Wolf's question, though. They look at the local levy all the time, and that's part of what they're supposed to do under the formula in deciding how much state aid to give. So if this is invalid because they reduce state aid in part looking at the local levy, why wouldn't all parts of the formula be invalid?
In this particular case, it runs into Section 16 and 21 of the Hancock Amendment, because the money that's being withdrawn is used to fund the new program or activity.
And that's a wholly separate argument.
It is a separate argument, but that's, you know, you go one way or the other. And if they're taking local money, they may not do it under 11G. If you're just taking away the school district's money on a per pupil basis to provide funding for charter schools for which there is no separate full appropriation, then you violate Article 16, Section 16 and Section 21.
But they're taking away per pupil funding because the pupils aren't in the Kansas City School District, because in part the state aid is determined by the enrollment.
No, and that's true. If students leave the Kansas City School District and go out of state or to another district, the Kansas City District loses that per pupil amount of funding. If they move out of state, they do. If the school district gets suddenly 5,000 more students, they get the per pupil amount additional. But in this case, what's different and what violates Hancock is it's not just that they lose the money. The money's not just taken away because the student leaves. That money they do lose. But then the state takes an additional amount equivalent to local taxes and uses it for duplicative fixed costs in violation of the Hancock.
But don't they do the same thing in the St. Louis inter-district transfer plan? Because they're taking their, if a child who's resident of the city of St. Louis enrolls in the Clayton School District, the money that would come to the school district, if it doesn't go to the school district, it goes to Clayton.
I'm honestly not familiar with
the money follows the student.
In this case, it's more than that. If a student leaves Kansas City and goes to Independence, Kansas City loses the per pupil amount of state aid. If that same student instead goes to the charter schools, the school district not only loses a per pupil amount of state aid, it loses an additional amount equivalent to the per pupil amount of state funding, which is then transferred by the state to charter schools. It loses twice. And if that were constitutional, then the state could say, we want you to transfer two times the per pupil amount of state aid, or three times, or four times, or all your state aid equivalent amount.
Are there any further questions? Thank you.
May it please the court. Let's begin with Section 11 of Article 10, but starting with B. In B, the Constitution speaks about districts having being able to tax for their respective purposes. In C, the Constitution speaks about districts having the ability to tax for their respective purposes, and then says the rate of taxation, that is the levy, can be increased for school purposes. That is, it uses school purposes and respective purposes as the equivalents. All that we did when we adopted G was to say that the requirement of C, that is, that there be a vote before there can be a hike in the rate of taxation or the levy for school purposes, all we did in G was we exempted one school district from that and from the Hancock Amendment's voter approval requirements. And we did that by saying that any school district who's operating levy for school purposes, that's the beginning of G, can impose this higher level, that is, the operating level for school purposes for the district. All it does is say that this levy for school purposes, and this speaking about the operating levy, not a capital levy or some other kind of levy, the operating levy, can be raised. There is not the barest hint in the history or in the language of G to suggest that it was intended to deprive the General Assembly of any authority whatsoever.
Is the tax money that's raised by a local levy, is that state money or is that local money?
This court has said way back in Clark v. Gordon that it is state money and that the state can reallocate it, and the state from time to time has reallocated it. And the state here, of course, doesn't reallocate it directly. It does so indirectly in a way that is theoretically similar to the foundation formula. That is, the state looks at how much money is coming into a district and how many pupils they have in that district and then makes a calculation. It ends up being a unique calculation.
But if that's a tax imposed by a locally elected board on local real property, isn't that a local tax? Or what makes it a state tax? I understand you cited a case that says that, but I'm curious as to why that's a state tax.
Yeah, I don't know that it becomes a state tax. I think it is that the state ultimately has created, can dissolve, modify, recreate school districts, so the state ultimately retains control. What we have here is a situation, well, the closest parallel, other than the voluntary interdistrict transfer program, which Your Honor is right, the local money does flow with that. Other than that, the closest parallel we have is the special school district in St. Louis County, where you have, in essence, two school districts covering the same geographic area. Now, here it's even less than that because there isn't another school district. There are schools, but not another school district. The approach taken...
Each of these charter schools is treated as though it were a school district, though.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you, Your Honor.
Each of these schools is treated as though it's a school district.
Yes. Yes, and it has to serve students within the Kansas City, Missouri School District. It can't serve other students. There are the same kind of requirements on those schools as there are in the other schools that are within Kansas City.
Can it take a student from Independence?
No. No. And as far as I know, they can't even do it if they pay tuition. I believe that's true, but I'm not positive that that's true. They have to admit the students from the district itself. And in that sense, it's like the special school district. But under Mr. Hallquist's approach, If the General Assembly decided to create a special school district for Jackson County, it couldn't redirect any of this $4.95 levy from the Kansas City schools to pay for the services provided by that special school district. It would have to have an entirely new and additional tax to pay for it, despite the fact that this district has one of the highest levies in the state of Missouri and one of the highest per pupil assessments in the state of Missouri.
Actually, doesn't 11G Act say that it applies to any successor school district or successor school district?
Yes, they could, I suppose, if the school district were dissolved or split, then the successor school district would have the $4.95 levy. But I don't know that you can interpret that to mean that if there were a special school district imposed, they could have a $4.95 levy that would be on top of the $4.95 levy
well,
that the Kansas City
School District would have.
Well,
actually, they'd have a $2.75 levy.
Excuse me?
They'd have a $2.75 levy.
The special school district? I don't know that they would.
Well, it's a school district, and the Constitution says you got a $2.75 without going to the people.
So maybe I better go tell the special school district that. I don't think that they interpret it that way. I'm fascinated. I was going to point out that in the reply brief, it became apparent that the school district is arguing that the state can't reduce payments to the Kansas City School District based on revenue that the Kansas City School District receives because they've now disavowed any distinction between an 11B and an 11C or 11G tax. That is, in their view, all of their money, unlike every other school district in the state, is exempt from the legislature looking at it and doing a foundation formula. But Mr. Hallquist has now said that's not true. He said that the district's revenue can be considered by the legislature. Unfortunately, there is nothing in the brief or in any of the argument in this case to suggest how in the world you can reconcile that with the position that they take in the brief about how the legislature cannot consider the revenue received under the 11G in order to decide how much money to give to the Kansas City schools. In addition to the 11G point, we have two arguments here under the Hancock Amendment brought by the taxpayers that Mr. Hallquist represents, not by the school district. The first of those is that there is a new or increased activity. That's a difficult thing for me to comprehend in that there are no more students eligible for services from the Kansas City School District today than there were before the charter law was adopted. Well, I shouldn't say that. There may be more, but if there are more, it's because they moved in. If there are fewer, it's because they moved out. Nothing in this legislation made anyone eligible for services to be paid under by the Kansas City schools or by the state who was not eligible before. There is no additional service required. No one is entitled to an additional program, an additional gym teacher, an additional facility. No one is entitled to something different because of this.
Opposing counsel argues in their brief that a number of schools that were private schools previously have become charter schools, and that is, qualifies as a newer increased activity because they're now being funded through that.
As a practical matter, they may have come into the system, but those students were always the responsibility of the Kansas City schools. Those students, on any given day, could have left the private schools and come into the Kansas City schools. The obligation to serve those students was always precisely the same. Frankly, applying the Hancock Amendment to schools is kind of a round peg in a square hole.
Isn't the real argument here not that there are new students or increased service, but in a way there is an added cost by less efficiency by dual schools?
Isn't that the real argument that translates into
you are forcing me to do business in a way that's more expensive?
I think what they're saying is that I can spread out my expenses across fewer students. You are paying me for fewer students, and I can only spread up my expenses out across fewer students. But that is exactly the same thing that happens every time a student comes or goes from a school district, whether they come and go from private school, as Judge Stith asked about, whether they go to or from a home school, whether they move from the district. Every day, a school district the size of the Kansas City district is gaining or losing pupils. And they figure out ways, well, at least most districts figure out ways to deal with that. The Kansas City district has been losing pupils since the 1890s. Well, I shouldn't say that. They're back to where they were in the 1890s. They've been losing students since the early 90s, and they had to figure out ways to deal with it, just like every other school district has to figure out how to deal with students coming and going. The fact that they didn't successfully do that for a period of time cannot be a basis for claiming that the state owes them more money, which, of course, gets us into the last of their arguments, which is this proportionality claim, that somehow the state owes them more money because of this approach, because we aren't paying the same portion of funding that we were paying at one time. They started at the trial court by using the wrong formula for calculating proportions. And their witnesses throughout the trial testimony used the wrong formula. And Judge Callahan held that they used the wrong formula. And yet, in their briefing in this court, there is no complaint from these taxpayers about that part of Judge Callahan's decision. There is no defense of the formula that their expert used. At the same time, they cite their expert's testimony using that formula. Well, you can't do that. The formula was wrong, the testimony of the experts was fatally flawed, and it cannot be relied on without at least making an effort to defend the formula that was used, and they make no effort to do that. In point of fact, what the district did at the trial court was that they took all of the spending by the Kansas City schools and assumed that it was all, if it could be tied to something that the state mandated, or that they say the state mandated, that it all gets counted as a cost that the state has required. Well, that isn't what this court said in Fort Zumwalt, and that it would be entirely inconsistent with the concept of the Hancock Amendment, which of course is intended to protect taxpayers, not to protect school districts. It is not intended to say to a school district, you can increase whatever you pay, you can provide services the state doesn't require, whether they are good services or bad, and that by virtue of that, force the state to pay more money to you. That would be inconsistent with the idea that the whole object of Hancock was to reduce the burden on taxpayers. That argument would allow a particular district to instead increase the burden on taxpayers. It cannot be reconciled with the provisions of the Hancock Amendment. Ultimately, the impact of the district argument are first to prevent the legislature from effectively having a foundation formula that accounts for this district's revenues. And conceivably, if this court were to rule in their favor and write broadly, it could get to the Clayton and Ladue districts that Judge Wolf referred to. Because their theory, if it applies to 11G, and since the 11G language is parallel to 11B and 11C, in theory, it could threaten the entire foundation formula. As to the Hancock Amendment, their argument would declare for the very first time that merely restructuring an old or to address an old obligation constitutes a new obligation. There is no precedent for that in this court's jurisprudence, and nothing in the language or the history of the Hancock Amendment to suggest that that was contemplated by any advocate of that proposal. And finally, as to the proportionality claim, they would have you abandon the Fort Zumwalt test, which is focused purely on what the legislature actually requires and the costs that are actually incurred by a school district to meet those actual requirements, and instead impose a test that is based largely on the discretionary choices of an individual school district, thus modifying the Hancock Amendment from something to protect taxpayers into something that harms taxpayers by protecting a school district that does not want to account for the costs that are actually required and instead simply wants to impose the levy that they are allowed to impose regardless of whether the money is needed or not needed. Unless the court has any further questions, let me...
I do. Mr. Layton,
yes.
Your opponent has stated that school districts are now losing double. Can you explain, or could you answer his argument?
Well, certainly there are some expenses that the district incurs that the district does not have to incur when the students are in the are in charter schools. The argument here is as if there was this whole set of things that the district has to do every single day, and it can't change even if you have 5,000 fewer students. You start with the superintendent. There are school districts in this state who have a superintendent who also serves as a principal. There are certainly school districts that have assistant superintendents and some that have none. And yet there's no evidence on this record to suggest that there was any real effort by the school district in Kansas City to look at the impact of the charter schools and to reduce its expenses to match the size of the district that they actually had. And in absence of that kind of evidence, they have failed to meet their burden of proof under Fort Zumwalt, and they have to, then you have to affirm the decision of the circuit court. Thank you.
Mr. Hulquist, to follow up on Judge Russell's question, you said they lose both state aid and state funding. I also am confused.
Okay.
By what...
All right. If a student attends the Kansas City, Missouri School District, they receive a per pupil amount of state funding. If that student goes to another school district or to Texas or to a charter school, Kansas City loses that per pupil amount of state funding. That's fine. If the student goes to the charter school gets that per pupil amount. That's fine. However, if the student goes from Kansas City to, well, not from Kansas City, for every student in the charter school, the Kansas City School District loses an additional amount of state funding that's equal to the per pupil amount of local funding. Let me try that again. When the charter schools was first enacted, it provided that for every student in the charter schools, Kansas City had to take a per pupil amount of state funding and give it to the charter schools, and a per pupil amount of its local funding and give to the charter schools. The state added together Kansas City students and charter school students into one number, took that number and divided it into total state aid and divided it into the state, to the local revenue. So Kansas City then would pay its state money and its local money to the charter schools. Now, if for every student who attends, to get around the problems of making Kansas City transfer its local money, the Kansas City School District loses its state aid when the student goes to the charter school. But it also loses an additional amount of the Kansas City School District state funding because the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education does the math on a form, and it calculates what the local funding would be. But instead of requiring Kansas City to write a check, they deduct it from the rest of the Kansas City, Missouri.
Well, but why isn't it logical or okay for them to decide that An additional amount of state funding is not needed by the district because it's serving fewer students, yet it's continuing to raise the same amount by a levy. Why isn't that simply a logical allocation of state resources?
They do that when Kansas City loses its per pupil funding. When a student loses, they do lose per pupil funding. But they're paying an additional amount to, as Chief Justice Price said, fund the duplicative fixed costs, which is the problem. If the state came in and said, Kansas City, we want to allow parents to set up separate schools in your district and with separate teachers and administrators who are part of your district, and we want you to pay these duplicative costs, that would violate the Hancock Amendment. Wouldn't violate 11G, but that would violate the Hancock Amendment.
Do you agree with my characterization that this isn't, that the violation you're claiming doesn't arise out of new students or new services, but a lessening of efficiencies?
And I would characterize it just a little bit, the duplication of the fixed costs.
Well, although they're not requiring that you do that, how does that fit in with the language of Hancock, though? I don't recall any Hancock language that talks about efficiencies.
No, and it doesn't. In this case, charter schools have their own schools, their own administrators, their own teachers, their own costs. When a student leaves Kansas City, you don't close down a building for one student, five students, 10 students. The fixed costs remain with Kansas City, and they go to the charter school.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that really something that Hancock remedies, though?
Hancock would say that additional cost of a duplicative school system.
But there's no additional cost to you because they go to the charter school as opposed to just leaving the city entirely.
But there is a duplicative cost that's not funded by the state.
But it's
And the state funds it by taking money in part from the Kansas City School District to fund the duplicative costs of charter schools.
Are there any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.